My name is Marlon. Welcome to my podcast. This is a special episode that I recorded with my wife answering some of the questions you asked us. So I hope you enjoy it, and please give us some feedback if you'd like for us to do more of this in the future. Okay, and we're back with our special episodes for my wife and I guess. You're answering, not answering, but discussing, talking about the questions that you sent us. And now this section, I guess, is focusing mostly on ministry and spiritual aspects of life. So the very first question we have here is, what was it hard to assimilate the role of a pastor's wife? I guess this is for my wife.
Well, where do I begin? So from the time we started dating, I knew that Marlon wanted to be a pastor. So I guess I had a while, since we dated for 7 years, I had a while.
Yeah, you have to talk about when we started dating. Yeah. We were back in high school.
Yeah, so he was in high school. And so I had quite a while to get adapted to the idea that I was going to be a pastor's wife. I know that I didn't know for sure if we were going to get married, but that was our intention when we started. We started off with the idea that we wanted to date, to find a person to marry. And, so when we started dating, we thought we were going to get married. So, I had all those years to kind of get used to the idea. One thing about, me is that I was always very involved in church. I always enjoyed, doing different things, whatever ministries.
When you say always, when did always begin?
Okay. I guess after we moved here, as a teen, I should say. Whatever was there to do at church, I was there. And whenever the church was open, every Wednesday, Sundays.
That's kind of how we met and fell in love.
Yeah, that's right.
So ministry was already a part of our lives, I guess, from the very beginning.
Yes.
From when our relationship started, ministry was already at the heart of it.
We worked together in youth ministries. We played handbells together. We worked together in translating services from Portuguese to English.
We were in the Pathfinder clubs together.
Yeah,
we sang in the choir.
Yes, we let out in Pathfinder, sing in the choir, taught Sabbath school. I was Sabbath school secretary for a while. What else?
We did the youth programs in the afternoon, our AYs.
Yeah, So I was very familiar with church. Church has been life for me since my teen years. So being around church all the time was not new to me at all. And I actually enjoy doing different things in church. So that part in itself was not difficult to assimilate, I guess. The hardest part was, it was more the expectations that I placed on myself. So for the first district where my husband was called to work, nobody said anything to me, you know, about being a pastor's wife or what I should do or shouldn't do or anything like that. But I had my own expectations of what I should do or what I should say or the way I should do things. And that it was a huge burden on me because I pretty much was expecting that I would, you know, I was going to try to be the best perfect example I could be. And I just couldn't, you know, we're all human and so am I. And I would go home and I would overthink all conversations. I would think over all the conversations I had that day. I'll play them back in my mind and think, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have said that, or I should have said that way, or that person could have thought this of me or that, or, you know. So it was a very, very tiring couple of years, because all of the time I was thinking over everything I said, everything I did, worried about what other people would think. But that was all self-imposed. Nobody ever came up to me and said, oh, you know, you did this or you should do that. Nobody did. It was just all me.
And also, you have to understand, this was early on. We had just graduated from college. We'd just gotten married. We moved to a different part. We had grown up in New England. Well, I guess I went to college in Tennessee. but now we were in South Texas. So it's a different world, and it was us, and we just wanted to do our very best, and we had a great time.
Yes, yes, it was. I have great memories from that time. I made some awesome friends that we're still in contact today. People we saw through high school, getting married, having children. So
it was great. It was great, but we didn't have very high expectations for ourselves.
And yeah, it was more like kind of idealistic view of what I thought a pastor's wife should be. And I, you know, was very idealistic. And
so when would you say that changed?
Oh, okay. So we went to Andrews, to seminary at the time. And then
2 years later.
Yes, 2 years later. And right when we left, I felt there was it's just a huge burden off. And then I realized what I had done. I realized what I had done. So we.
What do you mean? What you had done?
What I had done to myself, and you know, trying to make myself live up to those unrealistic expectations.
So you mean to say you could have just been yourself, and everything would have been fine?
Yeah. Yes. So we went to Andrews, and I realized what I did. Not that I was trying to pretend to be somebody else. I was just, you know, at the time before, it was more like I expected to be. It was what I expected to be, and the fact that I was concerned that I wasn't reaching that.
So it didn't matter how much you did or how hard you tried, you always felt like you were falling short.
Yes, yes. So I, at Andrews, we got the chance to meet and commune. What is the word?
Fellowship.
Yeah, with a lot of.
If you're using church speak, it's fellowship. If you're just talking like a normal person, it's just hang out.
There we go. I got a chance to hang out with a lot of other pastors and families, a lot of pastors' wives. And that's when I realized, you know, I'm human. I'm human too. And the best that I can do is to do me. So after that, I think it's something that comes with maturity as well, feeling more comfortable in your own skin. And I realized, okay, I'm going to do me, and I will make mistakes. I know I will. And when I do, I will do what I can to, you know, I will apologize if I have to, if I need to, I will make amends in whatever way is necessary. So just realizing that, yes, I am human. I cannot be perfect. And all I can do is try my best and, you know, pray and have God guide and try my best. And if I fall short, then I will pick myself up, you know.
And I think one of the interesting things is that nobody said that you changed. And in a way, you didn't. You just stopped being so hard on yourself. And that's what changed. You're still the same person, but you just weren't being so hard on yourself at that point once we came back from Andrews, or even while we were there.
Yeah, I guess what changed was the frame of mind. You know, I just felt more comfortable in the sense that I wasn't expecting that I would, you know, say all the right things all the time or do all the right things all the time. I make tons of mistakes. And now I just say, hey, that was a mistake. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. And
probably just watching me and all the things that I get to say and all the things that I do. It's like, wait, if he gets to do all that, no, it should be fine.
Yeah. So I guess so it wasn't hard in the sense that I had an idea of what I was getting into, but it was just hard in terms of the expectations that I had for myself. So the next question is, what are your views on family worship? Is it a thing of the past, or is it as important as personal prayer?
I guess this question is ended up being an either or question. I don't think it's an either or answer, but here's my attempt at answering this question. Family worship is vital. It's very important because I believe that this is how our children learn about worshiping God and how to go about that and what God is all about. They're going to learn it from my wife and from myself. They're going to learn from us at home. They're not really paying attention to the sermon at church. I don't expect their Sabbath school teacher to be able to handle all of it. I feel like this falls on the parents primarily. So our family worship is not my personal worship. It's not my wife's personal worship. This is pretty much us teaching our children what worship is all about, what God is all about. The vision and the understanding you're going to have of God, I believe, comes primarily from our family worship. So I think it's very important. It's something that needs to happen daily and regularly. And we have bought books in Portuguese and in English and different things, things from our denomination, things that are from different denominations, and just kind of, you know, talk about it and read it and show them the pictures. And we try to make it very age appropriate, but to definitely have that as a main element in our family life. We talk about God. It's part of our conversation, but we also have that special time where we come together and it's more singing and sharing stories and also just sharing what we're grateful for and what prayer is all about and how we thank God for the good things that we have in life and how we ask Him for the things about the things that scare us or the things that concern us. You want to add anything?
Yes, we started a family worship as soon as our children were born. So even when they were home for the hospital, day two, we were there. And we try to, I know that they probably didn't get much out of that, but we wanted to build that habit, that routine. It's something that we do. The time that worked out for both of us, it would be right before they went to bed. It was part of their bedtime routine. So we would always, after dinner or now after dinner or after they shower, right before they go to bed, we sit in their rooms, we sing a song or two, we read with them a devotional or a Bible story. We talk about things we're grateful for during the day. Sometimes they share things that they want to pray for. And then we pray together and they go to bed. It's nothing long or nothing. And it changes over time. Like I said, we started when they were babies. And at that time we had little noise making toys that they.
Oh, yes, the instruments.
Yeah. We had like little noise makers when they started, you know, grabbing things and they could shake like little shakers or bells or something like that. While we're singing, they could play that and just feel like they're part of it. And we encourage them.
And we had maracas. Yeah. And little shakers and tambourines and a triangle. And
Yes. So now sometimes for Friday evening worships, which is like our big one, they will play the piano for us to sing or the cello, or sometimes I will play something on the piano for us to sing and then the kids will pick up, you know, their ukuleles or something and pretend like they're playing.
Make a joyful noise.
Yes. So they that still means a lot to them. And I know because sometimes like we're in a hurry and we just came home and it's already really late and we say, okay, let's go to bed. And they're always like, no, mommy, the story, you haven't told us the story yet. So we always have to take that time, you know, it built that habit, what we intended to do.
We have a little bedtime routine, which involves a Bible story and a song and then they go to sleep. So it's a good routine to have. So it's not a formal worship.
Yeah.
But it is something we try to make fun and interesting, and we really focus on our kids. This is an opportunity to teach them about God.
And in the morning time, too, while they eat breakfast, we usually read a little devotional thought for them.
You know,
something
for them
to think about.
Usually something about nature and the animals, and tie it in with a spiritual lesson as well.
Yes. So, yeah, definitely a good thing to have family worship. We encourage it. It's now a habit for our kids, and we hope to continue it as they grow and mature. And we feel like they feel free to share with us their questions regarding spirituality and as well as share their concerns and think about things that they're grateful for.
And it's great that just the things that the questions that kids have about God and life and the universe, it's really interesting. So it's good to have that space, or, you know, to invest that time so that they can ask those questions. And even they start learning also that we don't have all the answers. But here's question number, well, I guess we're
three.
Not doing numbers.
Number three.
Three? I thought it was number two.
No, we just did the about pastor's wife, and now we did the one on the family worship, and now that's number three.
Okay, so question number three, what are some of the benefits of being married to a pastor? What about the downsides?
Another one for me? Okay.
I could answer that one. It's awesome being married to a pastor.
Well, this one, Okay, this one is a hard question to answer, just because there's people and there's people. There's pastors and there's pastors, you know, just like any other kind of vocation. So I can't speak for other being married to other pastors. So I can only speak about being married to this one pastor right here.
So the question is, what are the benefits of being married to Martin? What are the downsides?
Anyway, I think this person is asking a more general question just about pastoring itself.
Yeah, because Marlon's already married.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This one's taken, lady. Sorry. But, for me, in terms of, I love that wherever we go, there's a community. Everywhere we've been, whether it was in South Texas and all the different places we were down there, now up here in Georgia, I feel like we've had a family, a community, which has been very important because we live thousands of miles from our families. We got married on one day, and then on a Sunday, on a Wednesday, we took a plane and flew to South Texas, and we didn't see our families for like a year after that. So...
And now we're in South Georgia, which is a little bit closer to New England.
Yeah. Yeah. So wherever we've been in all of those different districts, we've found great friends and families and people that even though we have moved, we still reach, you know, they still call us. We still call them. We still talk. We still care for each other. So it's been a blessing in that sense that we have family wherever we go and friends wherever we go.
I think we've had very healthy relationships with the members of the churches where we have ministered, you know, as far as holidays and different things. They knew we didn't have any family close by. So many times they would invite us over or we would just, it felt like family. And I think we
still does.
We still does. We enjoy it very much because our family's still far away. So we sort of, a lot of the main things that people do, I guess, with their blood relatives, we do with our church family.
Yes, and that's very important to us. I think our personality types help. We are both, I can't say I'm completely extroverted, but we're not so much introverted. So it's not difficult for us to make friends and to be involved and around other people. So that's, I guess that's been good. So in that sense, it's great.
Oh yeah, there's that side too. We have moved pretty much every 2 to 3 years.
Yes.
Mostly every 2 years, two and a half years, and we moved.
For the last 11 years. I didn't think I was going to enjoy that part very much because I grew up in the same house like that I was born. I was there until I was 13, and that was the first time that I moved. And then we moved cross-country. Well, not cross-country, cross-continent, I guess, up here. To the States, and then we lived pretty much in the same area until Marlon and I got married. So,
and then since then we lived 2 years in our very first church district.
Well, we lived like in six different places, yeah.
Yeah, and then we moved to Andrews and we were there for 2.5 years. Then we moved back to Texas. One year in one apartment.
Another year in a house.
Then we moved and we were 3 years.
Yep, and then we moved here.
And then we moved here.
Yeah.
And it's going to be about 2 years now. And we hope to be staying here for a while.
Yeah, so we're not planning on moving anytime soon. But anyway, the move, I didn't think that I would enjoy moving so often. But... And the first time, the first move was definitely the hardest because I was so attached. I got so attached to our friends and all the families at the church where we were. And I guess I've been attached to all the friends in all the churches we've
been. It's just the first time we moved so far away.
Yeah, we did. We moved up to Michigan. Yeah.
Because when we came back, though we were in a different church, we were still what we call the Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah. So like within the hour's drive.
Right. We could still get together, visit each other. They'd still come over. So the other moves were easier because we were always still fairly close, I guess, until we came to Georgia.
Yes, but I've learned to appreciate even the moving parts, even the part about moving. I learned to appreciate because in a sense, like I get to make new friends. My family grows bigger.
And with social media too, I mean, we stay in touch.
Yes.
So we're still...
Our group just grows. And it also is a great opportunity for us to kind of declutter our home, you know, get rid of all the things that we thought we needed, but we really didn't. And, you know, we're not going to be just shipping things from one place to another.
Yeah, so everybody should move every 3 years or so just to get rid of all the stuff you don't need.
Well, I don't know if that's the only reason, but that definitely is a good reason. It does help. Other than that, I don't know what else. Downsides? Downsides. I guess that there was that beginning about my expectations on myself, but so far I haven't heard any of these crazy expectations from anybody on me. So I can't speak for that. I'm sure there's some people out there who experience some extreme crazy stuff.
I guess just the way that we were living our lives before, we were already so involved with ministry. And as a Christian, already had this idea of,
we are witnesses examples.
Of being a light to shine.
Yeah.
So that didn't change much with becoming a pastor's wife. I mean, part of the reason why I married you is because you're so amazing.
Oh.
So it's just, as long as you're yourself, it should be fine.
Yeah. Downsides. I mean, moving can be a downside. Moving often can be a downside, having to, find a place.
It doesn't happen as often. I guess once you get ordained, it's not as.
Yeah. Other downsides. I don't know.
I guess we've enjoyed ministry.
Yeah. So far, I
don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yeah,
I never heard you complain about being a pastor's wife.
Yeah, I had never wished otherwise. I can tell you that. So,
next question. You know, read this next question.
How did having kids change your view of God?
It changes it a lot because it changes, at least for me, it changed my view on love. I knew love, I guess, from a more selfish perspective because I guess I love my parents, I love my sister, and I love you. Yes, Vanessa. I'm sorry. I'm looking at Vanessa, my wife. But then the love for my children is very different because they don't contribute anything. They just take, and they have no problem asking for it. So I think one of the things that I realized is, why am I so afraid of asking God for things or feel like I have to work before I can ask Him for something or deserve it somehow? My kids have no problem asking me for things. Doesn't matter if they deserve it or not, if they behaved or not. They just ask because if I don't help them, they can't get it. Like from reaching things to opening things to, they just need my help a lot. And I realized, hey, I guess I should be okay asking God for help because I do need His help.
Yes. And also having kids raises your fear level to the max.
Explain that.
Like, it's just, there's so many things to be worried about when you have children. Not that you need, to be worried about, but just like things make you so scared for your children, for their future. And I am the type of person that I feel like I used to be very self-reliant, of course God is there and He's there to help me and I need Him. But now I understand that I'm completely dependent on Him because there's a lot of things that are beyond my control, things that I cannot help with. So I have learned to be a lot more dependent on God, to trust in Him with those fears that I have regarding my children, regarding my parenting, regarding, the things that we do for them and how they're raised. So I've learned to become a lot more dependent on God.
I think I learned just to be more trusting because seeing how my children trust us, how they trust me. And I'm so flawed, and it's kind of scary, but they have no problem trusting. And I felt like I could trust God more. And I felt like I already did trust Him, but it took a new depth. It took on a new meaning. Once I had kids and I had that relationship with kids, I realized, man, if I love my kids this much, I mean, and I'm a flawed, selfish human being, how much God must love me. And that allowed me to just lean on him a lot more than I was comfortable with before. Before, I guess I had a feeling, even though it went against my theology, but it's just this emotion, this feeling that I should somehow earn a little bit of what I wanted God to do for me. And I guess I became more comfortable with just asking for grace and depending on it and those things after having kids.
All right. I hope we answered that question. And I have one more question that came here through Instagram. What are some of your favorite de-stressing activities after a long day?
You're asking me? Or
it's
asking
for both
you?
Of us.
For both of us. I'll tell you what is not a good de-stressor. And this is one of my personal, I guess, things that I've been working on, especially in January. I take a break from social media and I try to take a break from just watching videos for entertainment in general. If it wasn't educational, I just kind of turned away from it. And I found that turning away from the phone and from the screens and from entertainment, and instead listening to music, finding something to read, or just doodling on a piece of paper or journaling. I found that to be a lot more, it helped me de-stress. It helped me, unwind, I guess, talking with you or playing with the kids real quick or reading them a story. I just found that has been helpful. So I guess starting now, February, I'm intentionally trying to do less screen time to find other things that I would enjoy more, from just physical things, either with a foam roller, or usually I'll get the lacrosse ball and put it on the wall and kind of lean against and have it massage my back or something, or, you know, just things, more physical things, I guess, getting in, being aware of my body and where it's sore and where it hurts, or reading. I have a book on, like, an anthology of poems, just this huge book that I got from a used bookstore, and flipping through it and reading some of that, and some other books that I have here on my shelf that I started reading and never finished. And just going through that, I found that to be a lot more calming for me as far as getting me ready for rest and sleep at night than, you know, scrolling through social media or watching a movie or doing these other things. I don't know. It's something that I guess it's fresh on my mind because I just experienced it last month and I'm bringing it into this month. And I just found that very helpful to help me unwind.
For me, I like quiet. I like quiet. And after a whole day of mommy, 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 I just like to vegetate, just sit quietly in the couch for a while. Sometimes I don't even have to do anything. Just sit there, maybe with a cup of tea or something. I like reading. I have a list of books here that I want to read this year. I tried last year. I subscribed, I guess, to a reading challenge, and I made a goal for myself of 25 books. And this year I'm repeating that goal, 25 books. So I have a list of books I'd like to read. Sometimes I de-stress, by sitting at the computer and editing photos, that I took during the day. I like that, or reading about photography. Sometimes I do sit down on the computer, just watch something. I know my husband was talking about how that's probably not the best way to de-stress.
Well, not for me, I guess. I guess it's something that I experienced and I enjoyed it, but, you know.
Yeah, but sometimes I just, you know, I just don't want to think about anything. I just want to sit and not do very much. So,
and one thing that I guess I've been rediscovering is music. I've always enjoyed music, but with the kids and the rush and then things, I hadn't really stopped to just listen. My wife likes it quiet, so I've been
I like complete silence, no noise.
Spotify has a pretty amazing variety of music, and personally, I like choral works, chamber choirs, or different things. And it's hard to come across that. Most people just have the usual, you know, that you always hear. But I found that having a good-ish, I don't go crazy, but a good-ish, you know, pair of headphones or earbuds or earphones, and just listening to the music, just experiencing the music. I enjoy that. I find that calming. Sometimes I'll just doodle on a piece of paper, or I'll just sit there and just enjoy listening to the music. Not background music that you listen to while you're doing something, but just enjoying the music. And I, you know, enjoy classical, and there's different things. I mean, there's a huge variety. Once again, I personally, when I'm doing that, I prefer Spotify, but I guess YouTube has different things. Or if you ever look up audiophile, they will have usually some higher quality, sound wise, and just trying different music and listening to different things. Just recently, I've been just rediscovering that and enjoying that. And it's something I can do in my wife's presence. Like, she'll be doing her thing and I'll be sitting next to her and listening.
Although there are some times where you have to put a earphones on
because I usually have the earphones on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause I, a lot of times, especially after a long day, I cannot take any peeps from anybody.
And I don't go,
unless sometimes we just sit and talk, and that's different. Yeah. But I don't want to hear any extra noise from anywhere.
Yeah, and I don't go crazy with the earphones. I don't get anything too expensive, but I just bought a nicer pair a while back. I don't know if it was last Christmas or birthday or something. Anyway, I think somebody gave them to me, and I've been enjoying it.
There we go. I hope we answered all your questions. I think this was it for the questions that were sent to us. We appreciate your asking, and we hope that these were helpful.
Yeah. And if you get more questions, just contact us through social media or on my blog, where I'll be posting these, and we can do more.
All right.
All right. May God bless you.